The detention center at Guantanamo Bay moved up a burner or two after President Obama was asked at yesterday's press conference if he was surprised that so many of the detainees are on hunger strike, and the majority of them apparently would prefer death over detainment. The president replied that he was not surprised and then said,
I think it is critical for us to understand that Guantanamo is not necessary to keep America safe. It is expensive. It is inefficient. It hurts us in terms of our international standing. It lessens cooperation with our allies on counterterrorism efforts. It is a recruitment tool for extremists. It needs to be closed.
But closing Guantanamo is one of the president's unkept promises from his first campaign. Congress blocked his plans to move detainees to a new supermax facility in Illinois, voting against moving any detainees to American soil. Foreign countries have not cooperated with the president's hopes to send some of the detainees home to their home countries. Meanwhile, many Americans may have been stunned to learn how many of the detainees are trying to starve to death, so many that medical reinforcements, as one reporter called them, have had to be rushed in. Carlos Warner is with us from the studios of WKSU in Kent, Ohio. He's with the Office of the Federal Defender in northeastern Ohio. He represents 11 of the prisoners at Guantanamo. We're going to speak with an ethicist about the ethics of force-feeding detainees. But Carlos, your thoughts on the fact that Guantanamo seems to be suddenly back in the headlines again.
Well, Robin, thank you for having me. It's back in the headlines because my clients and at least 120 other men in Guantanamo are starving themselves in a peaceful hunger strike, and that's unfortunate. We want it to be in the headlines because the United States shouldn't be holding innocent men, and that's what's happening in Guantanamo.
Well, you say innocent men, but remind us, some have been charged, some have not been charged, some are suspected of activities having to do with al-Qaeda and the 9/11 events. What about your clients?
Well, none of my clients have been charged. None of them have pending charges. None of them have had any sort of meaningful due process, and most of them have been held for 11 years without seeing their families. So I call them innocent, and I will continue to call them innocent because in the United States, if you've done something, the government goes to court, and they present their allegations, and we have a meaningful opportunity to rebut them. There's jurors and real judges who undertake these tasks every day in the United States. None of these men have had any of that process. The bottom line is that half of these men, 86 out of the 166, the government agrees, the dark forces in our government agree that these people should not be there. They should be instantly released.
You say dark forces.
The CIA, the NSA, FBI to a lesser extent, President Obama had a task force committee that reviewed all the men. That committee, with very little input from our side, determined that 86 out of the 166 men should be released immediately. And the second part is the most important part, perhaps, that they're not a danger. So they're being held there for no good reason. And yesterday, I heard the president's comments. I think he was exasperated when he gave them, and I understand his frustration. But we need action, not comments, because he's made these statements before. He has the power under United States law today to repatriate or transfer these men out of Guantanamo. He's not restricted by Congress. He blamed Congress yesterday. He said the Pentagon's doing a good job, and I disagree with that, although I certainly applaud what appears to be resolved to close Guantanamo again.
Well, picking up on your criticism of the president, the same criticism is levied in an op-ed in the New York Times a couple of days ago, it's actually the conversation that a detainee had with his lawyers on an unclassified phone line, and it was reprinted in an op-ed in the New York Times. It's a Samir Makbel. And he's also very critical. He says he was a Yemeni who just happened to be in Afghanistan, happened to be in Pakistan at the wrong time, was picked up and was doing nothing wrong and should be sent back to Yemen. But we understand that the Yemeni government has not fulfilled some security obligations to the American government. I mean, can you understand? There have been detainees released from Guantanamo, a handful, but they then took up terrorist activities again once they were released. Can you understand that the White House is requiring of these countries that they have some security measures and so far aren't satisfied that those are in place?
We're not stating, although the president can instantly lift his ban on repatriating people to Yemen, we're not saying that men should just be wholesale shipped to Yemen. I mean, there's countries all over the world that are willing to take these men, and the State Department has been working on these solutions for years. For example, Saudi Arabia has a rehabilitation center. Kuwait has a rehabilitation center. They can accept men. So to say that there are no diplomatic solutions is just false. I mean, there was an office before the president closed it dedicated to creating and investigating where these men could go. The issue isn't whether or not the president has the authority to release these men. He does. The issue is whether or not he has the political courage to do so. Does he have the political courage to release innocent men, not from the United States? You know, I watched him at a rally here in Kent State, Ohio. He didn't mention Guantanamo, and that was so painful to me because I hope this weighs on his conscience and he does what's right here, and that's release these innocent men. And if they're not, if you don't want to release them, the others have to be tried.
Well, meanwhile, tell us what your clients are going through. We are again reading in this op-ed about force feeding. Mr. Mokbel writing that when he refused to take food, a team from the Extreme Reaction Force in riot gear burst in, forced a tube down his throat. He says it's terribly painful. Are any of your clients being force-fed?
Yes. And in fact, the military is saying that 24 men are being force-fed. We believe it's many more. The military never attaches names to their numbers, and it's because they rotate people on and off the list. And it's been described to me this way. First of all, the military uses a tube that is too large, and often the men are strapped down, but they don't find the right passage for the tube. It takes 2 or 3 entries. Once it passes the sinuses, the men's eyes begin to water. As it hits their throat, they have a hard time breathing because the tube is too wide, and they gag. As it hits their stomach, their first reaction is to vomit. And as the formula is pumped into their stomach, sometimes they do vomit. These men have been hunger striking for 84 days now. Hunger pangs are gone, but when you force feed a man, the hunger pains come back. It's a clear violation of medical ethics to do this. Human rights groups have called for an end to it. The UN has called for an end to this kind of intervention. And it's Kafkaesque because these are the innocent men who want to die peacefully, who our government will not release, yet they're being force-fed to stay alive. That is like a bad Orwellian film.
Would it be worse, though, if the government allowed them to die?
I don't want to see my clients die. I mean, I have relationships with them. I know their families. I know them as human beings, which the American public doesn't. I don't want to see them die. But that being said, the way they're being treated now by the Pentagon, it's violent, it's unnecessary, and it's inhumane. The president can pick up the ball and change that by contacting people like me and my colleagues to negotiate an end to this hunger strike. The men have not put down the demand, either release me or I will die. That has never been the demand. The military that is currently engaged in this hunger strike is a different military than we had 1 year ago. They will not talk with the men. They are escalating the conflict instead of de-escalating. Why are they doing that? I have no idea.
Carlos Warner of the Office of the Federal Defender in Northeastern Ohio, representing 11 of the detainees at Guantanamo Bay. He believes that 10 of the 11 of his clients are on this mass hunger strike. Carlos, thank you.
Thank you for having me, Robin.
And by the way, we know this is a difficult topic to hear, especially mealtime for some of you, but those grappling with what to do say more Americans need to know what's going on at Gitmo. So after the break, we'll continue with ethicist Art Kaplan on the ethics of force feeding. But your thoughts, should prisoners be allowed to starve themselves to death? We remove their shoelaces so they can't hang themselves. Your thoughts at hearnow.org, on facebook.org/hearnowradio. You can tweet me at hearnowrobin. We'd love to hear from you. When we come back, the ethical questions with Art Kaplan in 1 minute, here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back. Or if you just joined us, we are watching the news out of Boston. 3 suspects taken into custody in the Boston Marathon bombing case, reportedly charged with obstructing justice. But right now, we are looking at Guantanamo Bay and news that over 100 detainees have joined a hunger strike, many being force-fed. We just heard a lawyer for some detainees saying he thinks that's ethically wrong. Let's bring in Art Catlin, head of the Bioethics Division at New York University's Langone Medical Center. And Art, when former British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher recently died, we were reminded that she was excoriated for not intervening to end the hunger strikes by the IRA prisoners in 1981. Bobby Sands and others did die. It was said that not intervening was unethical. So what's right?
Well, there is a temptation, certainly, to say, look, you can't let people commit suicide in prison. You should stop that and intervene. And many people feel strongly about that. But I think a hunger strike is clearly a political statement. It is not a suicide equivalent to somebody trying to hang themselves in their cell. They're trying to protest something, and it's clear at Guantanamo that's what's going on. If you put it into that framework, then ethically, any person, even a prisoner, can refuse medical intervention as long as they're not sort of a disease risk to other people. So you and I can say no to a feeding tube when we're in the hospital. We've established a fundamental right to privacy that doctors shouldn't be able to do things to us when we don't give permission. So I think ethically it is within the prisoner's right to say, I don't want to be force-fed through a tube through my nose.
Well, in fact, the American Medical Association agrees with you. The president, Dr. Jeremy Lazarus, wrote to Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel last week and said that any doctor who participated in forcing a prisoner to eat against his will was violating core ethical values of the medical profession.
Right. The precedent, if you will, long established through very different area, but it's the Terry Schiavo cases and the Quinlan-type cases. We have a long history in the United States of respecting people's right to refuse medical interventions, even when it will cause their death, whether it's taking water or having food given. And we've even extended that right to third parties to make that decision for others. It's a very, very strong fundamental core value. There are those who are going to say, look, you have to maintain order in the prison. Prisoners don't keep all their rights. They lose some when they go into prison. But my view is doctors should not be force-feeding. Nurses and nurses' aides should not be force-feeding. There is an issue of prison order, if you will, but I have no evidence, I don't think anybody does, that a hunger strike, even a death, leads to the unmanageability, if you will, of the prison. It's a brutal thing to go through. Most people on hunger strike won't make it because it's very difficult to do it. But it seems to me at the end of the day, ethically, and by the way, the World Medical Association agrees too, having had to think about those Irish hunger strikers, force feeding is just a violation of fundamental rights.
But what happened? You say maybe one death won't destabilize the prison, but what if there are 130? At some point, you know, it's interesting. I'm wondering if you could look at it this way. They say don't respond to hostage takers. Mm-hmm. Are these people taking themselves hostage?
Yeah, in a certain way they are. I understand what you're saying. They're basically saying, I want to put my life on the line to protest the conditions that I face. Remember, they don't have a lot of ways to protest or to get attention, so the hunger strike becomes one of the few vehicles available. But I don't think you're going to see 130 deaths. Time after time when a hunger strike has broken out, and they do in other prison settings, they've certainly happened in California, Connecticut, Arizona, prisoners join, but then they fall out. It's very tough to go through this. And I don't think we're ever going to see sort of a mass suicide event take place. It's just too hard to maintain and go through that hunger strike. So I understand that in a way they're trying to coerce a response. And in many ways, it would seem, you know, they have a point, because even the president has said, I'm not sure that we should continue to have Guantanamo. There's a lot of problems and issues here. But I think they do have that right to make that choice and to have that choice respected.
Yeah. Interesting, Art. We have a story coming up later today that sort of dovetails with this. As you say, we don't force patients and people suffering to take medical care. On the other hand, we have a harder time with suffering patients who want to end their own lives. And there's the case of the woman in Ireland right now suffering deeply mm-hmm. from multiple sclerosis. She wants the right to end her own life. She's lost the capability of doing it herself. And she wants the right of a loved one to, you know, it's assisted suicide. And they are saying no. And this man who's taking his common law wife home is saying, you know, it's interesting. If she were not a disabled MS victim, she would be legally allowed to commit suicide because she's sick and disabled, she's not allowed to commit suicide.
And a couple of interesting points around the Irish case. People do help others to die. It's tragic, it's awful, but it happens. We don't punish them very severely. It's very interesting. We don't send them to prison, the person who assists. They usually wind up doing public service. It's pretty clear morally that judges and juries understand what it means to help someone die who's in dire, dire straits. It's also interesting that in the states we've started to carve out a little bit of room for help in dying. Washington State, Oregon have legalized forms of physician-assisted suicide. Massachusetts barely defeated a proposal to put it there. There's a vote coming in New Jersey soon. The whole issue is complicated because we do draw a distinction between allowing someone to be left alone and the right to have assistance. I'm not saying that the right to have assistance shouldn't be created. I actually favor some of the Oregon and Washington style assistance things. But there is a difference between saying you can't touch me and I want someone to help me.
Well, and there are those who would say there's a difference between a severely disabled, ill person near death wanting to be eased into death and a prisoner, a detainee in Guantanamo, no matter how tough their circumstances, that some might see as trying to make a political statement as opposed to wanting relief from the situation. Of course, that's what their lawyers are debating. The lawyers are saying, no, they want relief from this situation.
Right. And I don't think they're suicides. I think they're trying to make a political statement.
Yeah.
One other quick point. It's not fun to get force-fed. It's a pretty brutal thing. You got to be strapped down so you don't fight it, and it hurts.
Art Kaplan, head of the Bioethics Division at New York University's Langone Medical Center. Art, thanks as always.
Hey, my pleasure.
And again, we'd love to hear from you at hereandnow.org. And we'll have more later on MS research and the latest news, including the news of more arrests or detentions here in Boston, Here and Now.
Support for Here and Now comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced. The ICA with Barry McGee. Vibrant paintings and installations capture the energy of the street in this 20-year retrospective on view now. ICABoston.org. And Harvard University, whose Harvard Summer School offers courses for high school, college, and adult students to earn academic credit and experience Harvard campus life. Summer.harvard.edu.